Hello and welcome along to another RTE Rugby podcast with me, Neil Tracy, and joined by Bernard Jackman. It is test week two of Ireland's tour of South Africa. I moved on from Johannesburg down to the beautiful town of Umhlanga, just north of Durban, which is the base for both Ireland and the Springboks this week. Not much more than a 5-minute drive between the two team hotels. So I wonder if they'll be crossing paths as the week goes on. As we speak, it is Tuesday evening recording here, just gone 6 o'clock local time in South Africa. The skies are dark behind me. This afternoon, I was down at the Springbok team hotel. We were listening to Razzy Erasmus and Bongi Mbanambi, as they did last week, a Tuesday team announcement for the box. And Razzy has run it back again this week. Same starting 15, same bench. The most experienced Springbok starting team ever at 990 caps. So, Birch, no fear of them putting the feet up this weekend.
Absolutely. And I think they were frustrated. I think both, it's bizarre, but both teams probably finished, both coaches were frustrated with last weekend's game, even though obviously the box got a win. I think they felt it was unnecessarily nervy for them at the end, and are kind of working, trying to work out how they didn't put Ireland away in a more convincing fashion, given the dominance they had in terms of possession and territory. And opportunities really in that first half that they didn't turn into the points they wanted. Obviously, Pollard missed some kicks, which is very unusual. But the fact they've gone so strong again is a real statement, isn't it? And it's going to be interesting. I thought Ireland, my good feeling post Saturday in Pretoria was Ireland actually have a chance to win next week in Durban. But then obviously the injury worries are very significant, and it's just another game, and they just look like they're gearing up, and they want to give the Durban crowd a similar type of opportunity and occasion that the more Afrikaans fans had in Pretoria.
Yeah, it sort of felt like a kind of a, as you said, neither team were on top form. It was like a 7 or 7.5 out of 10 Springbok performance against like a 6.5 out of 10 or maybe 7 Irish performance, where there was a lot of room for both to improve on. Like, as you mentioned, the Loftus there, I just have to say, like, being there at the weekend was something else. Like, yeah, my first time there, such a fascinating place and an incredible stadium and atmosphere, and you know, seeing it from the outside, but all the red bricks. What I loved about it was, like, there was no frills to the place whatsoever. And, you know, someone who maybe doesn't like rugby could look at that stadium and say, well, it's a bit old-fashioned and it's, you know, it's a bit run down in areas and it's not the most modern place in the world. But it almost has that, like, I'd say it had, like, that Fenway Park kind of a feel to it, where it felt like a great rugby arena just being there. And one thing that was a little unfortunate, the press box where we were sitting was behind glass, so you didn't get to fully get that atmosphere. We did walk out kind of 10-15 minutes before the match, kind of walked out into the stand just to stand there for a couple of minutes and soak it all in, and that was fantastic. But we, myself and all the other journalists, we got down there nice and early for about like 11:30, 12 o'clock in the day, and just kind of moseyed our way around the ground for a couple of hours because we did want to soak it in.
Do the media get a braai as well in the press room, or what do they feed you?
There was food there. I'll tell you actually before the game, what was great. A few of us were walking around, and I was with Murray Kinsella, and we walked down the road. He might have told this story on his own podcast a couple of days ago as well, with you, but we walked down to Affy's, which is one of the school across the road where Orgy Simon used to go. And that's where they had, I suppose, like the tailgating, for want of a better word, where the pitch was just, the rugby pitch was just converted into a car park. All the lads in from the farms with the big pickup trucks parked there. And everyone, in fairness, was so friendly around the place. There was actually like a great vibe. There's people braaiing and barbecuing all over the place. We walked in there, and within 2 seconds, someone actually stopped us and asked, just a family, would we take a photo for them? So after we obliged, they started talking to us, and this man, in fairness, within 20 seconds of meeting us, he was sending one of his kids away to try get us a drink, and we were trying to explain to him, no, you know, we're working, thanks but no thanks, and we politely declined. And you know what? I'm glad we declined, because what he was offering us, he was telling us it was this drink called a Springbokkie, which neither me nor Murray knew what it was. After Googling it a little bit later on in the evening, we discovered it was a some sort of a cocktail containing vermouth and something else on top of it as well, which wouldn't have been conducive to writing a match report. So
could have been some of your best work, Neil.
It could have been. Who knows? We might try it someday. But no, just some like it was a great atmosphere. And in fairness, the Springbok fans there were really nice. And seeing the team come in, it was incredible. Like seeing grown men and women just screaming Razzie Erasmus's name as he walked past. It was like one of the Beatles had walked into the room. So I would say it to anyone, put it on your bucket list. A Springboks game at Loftus is up there. Now, I'm sure this weekend is going to be brilliant as well here in Durban. We'll move on to the news of the week then, which, as we said, was the big news from an Irish point of view. Obviously, Dan Sheehan and Craig Casey out, Dave Heffernan and Nathan Doak into the squad. There are potentially other injuries being monitored. Robbie Henshaw, we believe, departed with a HIA on Saturday. Also, some knocks to James Lowe Bundiaki, Jamie Osborne and Andrew Porter as well, who got that nasty cut on his hand, but we think that one should be fine. There's no official update on those players. Ireland will be doing media tomorrow, so hopefully we'll get an update on that. Before we go in, I suppose, Birch, to the ramifications of how Ireland are going to line out this weekend and things like that, it looks like Dan Sheehan's injury is going to be a serious one. It's not confirmed yet, but it's a suspected ACL injury, we believe, which realistically you're potentially seeing him missing the whole way through next year's Six Nations. Regardless of what happens this weekend, like it's just a crap blow for a player who was for the last couple of years as good as anyone in his position in the world.
Yeah, look, he was certainly to be on the Lions tour, I think, and probably starter. I mean, he really could play for any team in the world, I think. And it's been quite robust, and it's a big blow to him. Yeah, like 9 months usually. So he could obviously get back for the tail end of next season with Leinster, and maybe force his way onto a Lions tour. But yeah, it is a big blow, and it's a huge blow for this weekend. I mean, it's a great opportunity for Ronan Kelleher, who, you know, 2 or 3 years ago we were saying, you know, he can be the Irish hooker for the next 8, 9, 10 years. That's how good he is. And he's had to bite his lip a little bit and you know, play that impact role off the bench at Provence and for Ireland. So it is a great opportunity for him, and it'd be interesting to see how he develops. And obviously Herring will go on the bench, and then Dave Heffernan's been called out as well. So but from an Irish point of view, in terms of an X factor player, and to be honest, Dan Sheehan's profile in terms of how his skill set, his attributes, is probably more suited to Ireland or more important for Ireland than other teams because of how Farrell wants to play, and it wasn't evident at the weekend, whatever. But you know, dynamic, quick, skillful. Well, it showed actually. Sorry, the little pass for the to Bundiaki, which led to the Osborne tries. You know, not many hookers have that in their locker, and so it is a big blow, and his energy as well, and his guts, and his work rate off the ball. He's become a key player for Ireland, and it was very unfortunate. And he tried to stay on, obviously, but the Robbie Henshaw one, like, was that concussion or that HIA from the Khaleesi one? Obviously, he didn't go off for a HIA at the time, but remember Khaleesi had a strong carry in midfield. It's a lot of injuries. And then Porter's cut, I've seen a photograph of it. Is that from a boot, or was it just a tear with his finger going back, like, out of kind of range?
Yeah, I'm not... I don't even know what happened there. I was trying to look back at it on Sunday when I was watching the match back, and I couldn't pick out anything in particular that actually happened there. It feels like it was kind of like in the web of the finger almost.
Yeah, it's unusual. You don't see many cuts like that, you know, in games. It's usually for contact cut, you know, on a sharp part of the body, an elbow or whatever. But yeah, it's quite a high attrition rate, and it kind of it worries you a little bit about this week, doesn't it? It worries me anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and I suppose we're really not going to have a clue until we name the team. Even though I say we'll be getting an update tomorrow, those updates tend to be fairly vague and don't really give away a huge amount, unless, as you say, it's like a Dan Sheehan or Craig Casey situation where it's a fairly open and shut case on it. On Ronan Kelleher, you kind of hinted at it there. Yeah. Would you be fairly set on Kelleher to start, or would you be tempted to throw in Rob Herring? I say it because looking at the line out, I know you've spoken before about how much you like Rob Herring as a line out thrower. Like looking back on Saturday and the World Cup game in September, where Kelleher started, and obviously in that first half we know the Irish line out struggled as well. Then he came on at half time on Saturday, and looking at the tracking of the lineouts, when Sheehan was on, Ireland were 4 out of 5. Kelleher in the second half, 3 out of 6. I suppose obviously at that stage the bomb squad are on, and South Africa made loads of changes. Would you still have faith in Ronan Kelleher around the lineout?
Yeah, I would, but I'd have more faith in Herring. Just from a pure throwing point of view, I think he's top class in the area. It'd be really interesting if, you know, I'd love to be in the fly on the wall and there's the coach discussion, Paul and Simon, everyone discussing John Fogarty, obviously, you know, Herring's a very good scrum operator as well. He mightn't be as big as as Kelleher, but I know he's a very smart technician. Very, very smart. So I think, you know, John Fogarty was doing some scrum consultancy for Ulster there when Richie Murphy came in, just to tide him over. And I believe that, you know, Rob stepped up as well. So it was kind of shared a little bit. Because obviously John was trying to double the job, and he wasn't there as much as a normal full-time scrum coach could be. So that may be an issue. And obviously I know he was, another scrum at the end for the penalty try was pretty horrific, but in general we actually scrummaged quite well. With our first choice front rows, and I thought Porter was outstanding against Malherba in particular. But you can't help but fear for that area of the game as well, you know, this improving, and like if they get any bit of ascendancy that they got late in the game, because they got the penalty before that was from a scrum as well, that which led to James Lowe trying to keep the ball in touch, and that try as well. So that's a worry for us. Particularly if Porter's out, I think we could be under big pressure there. But yeah, I don't see Kelleher as being an impact player, really. I think he's and probably not Herring either, to be fair. Like they're both fellas I would say start. Whereas you could say with Dan, you know, bring him on after 50 minutes and he will run. Run riot. The other two are more starters in my opinion. So I've got no strong preference. I think probably logically Kelleher starts because he was ahead of Herring, and I do think that there was the line that has started. I think it's more an issue around it's not so much a throwing. We have the box have shown an ability to shut us down pretty well. And I was a bit disappointed with our ability to have a really solid plan and get quality ball in that area. So I'm sure it's been a tough week for Paul, and he's trying to design a menu this week that gets us quality ball.
Yeah, and like on the line out as well, Razzy Rasmus was actually quite good on it. He was much more business than usual, Rasmus, today. He wasn't his usual kind of like joking self, up to mischief like he was last week. This was a much more straight-laced version of him, and he did speak quite well around the lineouts. I'm just trying to dig up the quote here, particularly around like South Africa's good record against Ireland in those last couple of games there. And he did kind of say like it's been a combination of a lot of homework, a lot of homework, and trying to go back on what he knows from Paul O'Connell from when they would have overlapped, when Paul was kind of starting his coaching career at Munster before Razzy left. But he also says, I do think this team, being the Springboks, is becoming a bit more mature and players are taking more responsibility, like the Irish players that I experienced when I was there. There's a cultural difference when players come in, learn profiles, study opposition, and it took us time to get this in the squad. We started in 2018 and here we are 6 years later, and we've slowly brought that culture of ownership of those things. So he's kind of saying like that the players he has at his disposal, your Peter Steffs, Eben Etzebeth, Franco Mostert, it hasn't always been there with them, but they're learning how to, I suppose, pick up on things in the moment.
And
that's probably something like what a Peter O'Mahony has had down the years on defensive lineouts.
Yeah, no, 100%. And look, if you look at the box defensive lineout, they don't try and reinvent the wheel every week. They've got their own core fundamentals, mainly around where they want to give you the ball. You know what I mean? So we saw, you know, you see a lot of teams trying to hurt them down the front, because normally Bongi tries to play two roles, so he'll leave the front of the line out, like, as the ball's being thrown in sometimes, to be a tail gunner. And Wales tried to exploit that with a kind of a little front peel, but again, the scramble, like, everybody seems to be so aware. That's the thing about the box, is that they can set up differently than other teams, but people's awareness and their ability to live off scraps or make 60 or 40-60s their own, or even dominant for them, is incredible. And that's and then obviously teams are thrown over the back a few times as well, which again can guarantee a ball, but it's what you do with it. You know what I mean? So I think that's the thing about them, is they've been so consistent in how they defend. They just everyone understands it perfectly, and it puts the opposition on the back front, because they're then trying to win ball in areas that they're not used to. And then I think for Ireland, you know, Razzie saying he kind of had an insight into Paul, certainly RG and John Klein in particular, would have had a fair idea of the philosophy. And I'm not saying that it's not fluid, but even like Pete and Tyburn coming back from Ireland, you know, to Munster, it happens all the time that players come back from international level to their province, and they share, you know, ideas, philosophies, calling systems, to try and, if to make their own team better. And again, you know, there's no doubt that at a line out defensive meeting, you know, RG would have been piping in with little tidbits of information he has, you know. So it's it's probably the worst possible opposition Ireland could have in that area, for lots of different reasons, in all parts of the pitch, but particularly defensive lineouts, they're pretty hard to work out. They're not hard to work out, they're hard to beat, yeah.
Yeah, let's move away from the tight five stuff, because I think we could probably get lost in that for a while.
Exactly, yeah.
Craig Casey, obviously, is the other blow. It's not necessarily like, you know, I don't think we'd have any fear of Conor Murray coming in.
No.
You know, there's no worries there, but probably worth mentioning him, considering it was the biggest start he's had for Ireland, the biggest game he's got to play for Ireland across these 15 caps. And while he was on the pitch in those 63 minutes, there was a lot of pressure on him, and he was dealing with it pretty well. He was having a good hour before he ended up getting that bad concussion.
I think it was probably as good a performance he's had this year. And that's not saying he's been in bad form, but it was a real standout for him when the opportunity was presented to him. He took it, and it was a really difficult game for a nine, because the breakdown was an absolute mess. We weren't really getting front foot ball, and there was bodies in the way, etc. And I just thought his passing was really snappy, but also his defense, but probably the one that stands out most is his kicking game under pressure, was excellent. So he kicked quickly and accurately, and got us some territory when we really needed it. So I think it was a massive step forward for him, and obviously he won't get to play this weekend. But you know, you go into November, and if there's something wrong with Gibson Park, you'd have no fear about Casey now, which is exactly what he would have wanted to get out of this.
Certainly. On the incident itself, what were your thoughts on that? Because obviously it just ended up being a scrum. It was RG Snyman reaches out, slaps the ball out of his hand, grabs the arm, sorry, I should say, in case he knocks it on.
Yeah.
And then there's the follow through, which is, I believe that's what the Irish management aren't particularly pleased about. Now, obviously, it wasn't head contact. It was Casey hitting his head off the ground afterwards. Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's very marginal. I think I think if it's a penalty given against Lyman there, I don't think there's anyone really going to be outraged. I think a yellow card would have been, you could see a yellow card given if the TMO really got stuck into it. But I think he knows what he's doing. Steinman does, but I don't think it's horrific. I think just that little clip of what was happening in around that, like, just showed how chaotic the game was, you know. So it was a very unfortunate injury. There's something on social media there that the GPS, or sorry, no, the information from his mouth guard, in terms of the impact or G force, was it's the biggest impact recorded ever. Since they started using that technology. So look at that, and that's just unfortunate, very fortunate the way his head kind of snapped back. And I don't think Orgy Steinman would have intended that at all. And he's just trying to come on and give impact and be an enforcer. So yeah, a penalty for me, I wouldn't have had any issue with. I don't think it was much more than that.
I did see it suggested. The lack of reaction from any of the Irish players to that. If you were out there on that pitch, and you know, arguably the biggest man on the pitch takes out your scrum half, would you have expected a couple of Irish players to just be having words? I'm not talking about diving in.
I don't think there should have been a fight about it or anything. I think the players themselves, like, I think it's kind of, a lot of them were excited by it. You know, it was kind of happened. The ball went to the right, and he kind of followed through. I think Ireland were. It was just such a messy game. It was just, you know what I mean? Like, there was so much happening. I think the Irish players were maybe wondering why it wasn't. Was it a penalty at the breakdown, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd say my good feeling is that the players probably post match realize it was worse than it looked probably to them at the time. If you know what I mean? Yeah. So.
It did probably happen behind the backs of some of the players.
Exactly. As he followed through.
Let's go to the start of the match then. When it was a strange one, where all week, you know, the Irish players and management had been asked about what have you been seeing from South Africa under Tony Brown now in that first game against Wales. You know, your experience of playing against his style of attack in the World Cup when he was with Japan. We knew what was coming, we knew what to expect, but there was such a, it felt like there was a lack of energy in that Irish defence in the opening 20 minutes in particular. And when you look at the try that was scored after 3 minutes, just how slow that middle section of defenders were to get up and pressure off the line. It was strange to see such low energy from Ireland in those first few minutes.
Yeah, but and at first, that's what I feared going into this game, was because that was kind of how the Leinster team looked against the Bulls, you know, Munster less so, but it wasn't the same energy in the Munster performance against Glasgow as we would have seen a little bit earlier on in the season. So I think it's a massive testament to Ireland's doggedness and resilience and bravery that we recovered from that and actually made it a proper test, because the first 15, 20 minutes, you're thinking, you know, with what South Africa were doing plus the bench they had, this is going to be a 25-point defeat, I felt. And in fairness to Farrell, Ireland haven't ever got, in the last couple of years, got tonked. You know what I mean? Like, England was close. New Zealand was close. That was still, you know, the game was there and got into the final 5 minutes there. So they have this ability to stay intact and not lose the head. But I think, I actually think Ireland were surprised by the revolution in South Africa's attack. I know that they would have known Tony Brown was there, but there was a stat I saw. So in the World Cup, passes per match, you know, 82, 67, 84. Against Wales, 119, but against Ireland, 175. Like, this was the game that they just implemented the Tony Brown system perfectly. Now, you could argue that they weren't allowed to do it by Wales too. You know what I mean? They might have wanted to do that against Wales, but Wales' line speed and energy and work rate were superior. And Ireland kind of let them play the way they wanted to play. And I definitely think Easterby will be focusing on that. But that game is the game where you go, Tony Brown's had an effect. Mm-hmm. Whereas Wales, it was harder to see it. And I don't know why we were so slow to react. Like, in some way, my initial reaction was, is there confusion over how we're defending? Are we trying to defend like Ireland or like Leinster? You know what I mean? Like, because There was no massive intent or wit on the defence to be able to go and shut it down. But then that recovered a bit. But also, it wasn't just line speed and width. We started to go after them at the breakdowns of the wide channels, and they started to lose a couple of balls there. And then they became quite loose as well. Like, they were offloading, you know, under pressure and putting players in a worse position, giving them possession. Ireland were after them. So I'm not sure Ireland found the total solution to it. I think maybe South Africa would feel that they wasted opportunities as well.
Gary Ringrose did make a big impact, though.
Yeah.
In that regard, in the second half, didn't he?
100%, and that's exactly what we needed from him. And look, he is a defensive leader. He is a leader, and he's the only real 13. Like, Robbie does a good job of 13, but Gary is the 13, and he's used to defending. Very close to the edge there, and he communicates incredibly well. And he gets people set up inside, outside him. So yeah, he's a big role to play this weekend, I think.
It does make you, as you were kind of talking about, like how well South Africa were looking in attacking in those early stages. It does give you a little bit of a shiver if you think, like, geez, if they actually perfect this side of the game, God knows what it's going to be like in 4 years' time. Because when you were seeing Sia Khaleesi and Peter Steph out on the tram tracks, getting the ball isolated with space to roam in front of them, and the space that Peter Steph got out on the right, nearly put Cheslin Colby in for a try, and it was only a great tackle from Jack Crowley that held him up, that stopped him. Then you saw Sia Khaleesi out on the other side of the pitch, just bouncing Robbie Henshaw off him. If they can start getting those things together and really nailing that down over the next couple of years, just with the foundation they have of their pack, bloody hell, 2027 could be a tough World Cup for everyone.
Yeah, 100%, because they have the set piece, both attack and defence. They have the kicking game. They have the defence. They have the power. They have the muscle. They have the depth. This was the only thing they were really missing. And it hasn't stopped them winning the Lions series and 2 World Cups. So you're being very, very critical to say they're missing it, but it gives them another layer. And maybe it can do things easier. You know what I mean? Like, I think Ireland, you know, if they played a power game, the one-out game, which you tried lots of times as well, you know, Ireland can get nice and narrow there, and you're able to get double shots on, and you're not going to dominate them, but you're going to survive. And we did survive, but then that ability to get to width with good shape, get the right people, you know, on the ball, getting those connections and getting them comfortable attacking with each other in the edges. The athleticism they have, you know, whether that's even Quagga. Quagga, obviously, we didn't see him as much on the edge, but he would be ridiculously good out there. Mm. It's a fearsome thought, really, of how good they could be. They could be the complete team, you know, like they could be like the All Blacks, the great All Blacks teams were never strong, I don't believe, up front. You know, they were all very good footballers, very skillful, very fit, mentally tough, etc. And an amazing sides. But this South African team, if they add another layer, could be the complete team.
Absolutely.
Now, I would say that the age profile, like, we're kicking forward to Australia now. You know, that's this is the most experienced South African team ever. So how many of them are going to be in the same condition in 3 years' time is another question. But you'd certainly be very comfortable if you're a Springbok, you're going to have some good years ahead.
Certainly. What else will we talk about here? We've got a few things to go through. One of the... We'll stay on, I suppose, things for Ireland to be working on. And it's something you touched on earlier on when you were talking about the fact that Ireland's scrum for the first hour or so was actually pretty good. And Bongi Mbonambi was doing media today. He was talking about it as well. And he was saying that, like, South Africa were quite frustrated. The starting South Africa pack ended up being quite frustrated, and they've had a few long conversations in the last few days. Now, he did throw in as well the fact that Ireland liked to play a few tricks at the scrum. Mm. And, you know, the box just want a good, honest contest. So he was just dropping that one out for Carl Dixon to tune into this week. But but in general, it was fairly even for the first hour in the scrum. And you might say Ireland just about edged it. But But once the two replacement front rows came on, unfortunately, there was no contest for Ireland, and that's where the worry probably is. Would you, a couple of questions on it? First of all, would you be inclined to give Ollie Yeager a run this week just to see how he do, just to see how he gets on?
Yeah.
And also then, like, it's nothing against Keane Healy, but it just highlighted the fact that how we need to be developing more loose head props, and we need to be seeing how people are getting on in these test matches, and it's not good for Ireland that we're so reliant on Andrew Porter, and also then when he's not there to be so reliant on Keane Healy.
Yeah, 100%. I look at it, it's not against Keane, as you say, but I think if you're the third and fourth choice loose heads, you know, you'd have to be saying, whenever I'm going to get a shot, even if it's off the bench. And this is probably the game that Farrell can afford. Like, I'm not saying he's not targeting a win or anything like that, but it is an opportunity to have a look at somebody against, you know, what's probably one of the greatest tests now. Like, even the Georgians aren't scrummaging as well as they used to. This is the litmus test for front rows. So
can I interrupt you there actually as well, actually, yeah. And just on the loose head side of things, how much of this is the IRFU need to be getting smarter at developing their loose heads or concentrating on it, and how much is it that the loose heads out there around the provinces, how does someone need to start banging on Andy Farrell's door and start getting really, really bullish about the way they're playing? Because Ireland do have a lot of options there in that middle 20s age bracket that in theory should be primed for banging down Andy Farrell's door and, you know, putting in performances. But the problem is that there aren't many of them actually doing it.
Yeah, and they're all Irish qualified, Barrett, because now Kitchoff is gone. And I don't think Farrell has missed the, like, I wouldn't criticize him. I don't think he's, like, most of fans would say, oh, Jeremy Lockwood's had a great year, you know, and I don't disagree with that. But do I think Jeremy Lockwood would go in and would come off the bench and replace Andrew Porter and give the same level of impact as Vincent Cock, you know, the other side, but just, or Malcolm Marks, like, that's the thing, like, there's, sometimes their bench is better than their starting team. I'm not really sure that the middle group, the guys who are holding down starting positions in the provinces, the other provinces, bar Leinster, I'm not sure who's missed a trick with any of those, really. It's probably something younger than that, or hopefully a couple of options younger than that we're going to have to hope come true quickly, to be like proper tests, like tier one nation tests, props, either starting or off the bench. And I think that's Keane has done a phenomenal job of staying healthy and staying fit, but nothing has come to really pressure him in a significant way. And as I said, I don't blame Farrell for that, but it's an area now that's become critically dangerous for Ireland, I think. And we won't be winning World Cups or can take winning Six Nations for granted unless we solve that, you know. And someone could say, oh, it's cyclical, but it's just too long a cycle, you know. It's too long a cycle not to get worried about it. And I'm really interested to see, like, is there a plan to try and find a couple more? Because you have to find a couple, yeah. And what can we do to develop them to make sure that they're viable options for Ireland in the next 18, 24 months?
One more work on we'll talk about before we'll finish up on a positive note. And I've decided now as well, we're not gonna talk TMO and Ronan Keller.
Yeah, okay.
Dragged back foot, because it's been 3 days and I think people have had enough of it now at this stage. We all know what the opinions are out there. We'll talk about the rugby specifically. So Peter O'Mahony as captain, and we can, I think we're starting to see why Andy Farrell has been so keen to keep him in as captain, because Caelan Doris has been filling in the last couple of months. James Ryan, as we saw, has gotten the wrong side of referees. this season as well while playing for Leinster. And Doris, in fairness, he spoke to us after the game, and he was actually quite honest about how he's still getting to grips with how he's dealing with referees and when to push and when to pull and when to ask questions and when to maybe just nod and smile. And I don't know, it's all coming together that there is a little bit of a vacuum of I don't want to say vacuum of leadership, a vacuum of communicators with officials.
Yeah.
We're going to have to try get to the bottom of before Peter O'Mahony retires.
Yeah, and probably it's something that we haven't had a very successful succession plan in. Mm. Like, and also, like, Caelan Doris is a world-class player, but he hasn't had that
And he was Ireland's best player on Saturday.
Exactly. And then the referees would know he's a world-class player, but they're not used to dealing with him. They haven't built up that relationship that you build up over time with referees that Johnny and Peter and Brian had before him and Paul had. So that's a challenge. And even with Sia, you know, like I remember Dwayne Vermeulen used to be a massive kind of help to him. It was really like a co-captain at times and helped him build his relationship. And then Sia has become an icon. You know what I mean? So when an icon of the game, and the way Sia, if you listen to Ref Mike, like, he's very polite. He has an ability to make his point in a very non-aggressive or whinging way. And the rapport seems to be different than Caelan's getting at the moment, or James Ryan, et cetera, et cetera.
But it's also different to the report that Peter O'Mahony's getting, because he seems to be getting along fine with officials.
No, absolutely, no, 100%. But I'm saying, sorry, Pete has built up enough of a reputation or a relationship as a captain that he can do that. But like, change the jersey there, like, when Pete's not captain for Munster, and you're listening to the Ref Mike,
they're telling him to go away.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's an absolute nightmare. And in actual fact, I would say, he's not perfect either, or as any of them, none of us are. But it's just, that's the challenge for Caelan is that, like, if Andy feels Caelan is going to be the captain of Ireland till the next World Cup, at least, or longer probably, if it's successful, he just needs to double down now and actually let him get that those hours. With those referees, and for referees to know that this isn't a short-term gap. He's not the guy filling in for the last 20 minutes because Pete's gone off. You know what I mean? And I don't blame Caelan at all, on this at all. It's just the transition that we're going through. And unfortunately, I will also say, to be honest, I think Caelan suffered a little bit because I think if we there's a lot of voices in the Irish team. There's a lot of complaining and questioning and second guessing throughout the matches, and not just for Ireland, at provincial level at the moment as well. And they all talk, and they all referee Irish teams in the Champions Cup as well. So you can build up a level of intolerance as well. And they go in actually going, "Oh, I'm sick of refereeing these fellas." And I'm not saying we're at that level yet, but I certainly don't think we're whiter than white, and particularly late in the game when referees are getting flustered. And I'd say the match referee was flustered because of how hard it was to referee that match. Like, it was insane. Like, I don't want to talk about a team all decision, but it's just a ruck that I think anyone who watched the match will have seen three or four times because the TMO looked at it. It's the Kelleher kick back. But like, you watch that in slow motion and back three or four times, you can see four or five different penalties. Do you know what I mean? And the ref has to do 140 of those a game or 160 of those a game and try and get them right. So like, it's incredibly difficult. Plus, the referee's at altitude as well. Like, he's sucking diesel. It's an incredibly loud, intense atmosphere. Like, yeah, I think referees, and I've said this before, is one of the thing we don't think about when we're talking about quickening the game up and more ball and play time minutes. Well, they have to be able to referee with that fatigue as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm sure that, like, and I think we have to be conscious of that. And sometimes less is more towards the end of the game in terms of asking for clarification and that relationship.
Yeah, and it's funny, sorry, you just mentioned the disallowed try as well, because it did remind me, it was funny on the day, as I mentioned previously, we're behind the glass, and we'd one TV in the media room and we didn't have sound on it. So we couldn't hear obviously the interactions between between Luke Pearce and Ben Whitehouse, same as the people sitting in the crowd. Sure. So I'm pretty sure there were almost three or four different opinions out there of what he's actually looking at. Someone was saying he's looking at the neck roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone else is saying he's looking at the foot hooking it back. Someone else is saying, well, was there a crock roll on Bundy? And then someone else is asking, was there a knock on from an Irish player? So
yeah, and Keller could have easily come in the side as well. You could take that. You know, it was, but like, in fairness, like every ruck is an absolute mess. Like, it's crazy. And they're letting so much go because they have to, because they want to get ball and play time and they want flow. But like, I can't see how they wouldn't be in a frazzled mental state as well, because it's so intense. And and obviously then if you have players that have a very strong relationship with them, or as I said, that iconic status which Sia has and some of the other box at the moment, we don't have that. Like, Ty Furlong's not that iconic player at the moment that he was. You know what I mean? Like, he's not at the peak of his form. It's not bad. Porter is. Dan is, but he was gone off. Like, you know, Johnny's gone. Gibson Park didn't play. Gary was on the bench. You know, we don't have Hugo wasn't there, and he's someone who referees would have a huge amount of respect for. Yeah, it's just a little bit. We're kind of in a little bit of transition. Joe McCarthy's a young lock. You know, Ty Byrne has it, but he wasn't the captain. So it's just we're in a transitional period there, and it's going to be massively over next year. I think with Farrell away, it's one of the big challenges for the next coach. With Farrell obviously having a big influence in it, but how we develop that leadership group?
Yeah, growing pains. I think is probably the best way of describing it. We'll see how it goes. Before we finish up, let's do one final positive note, because we've barely mentioned him aside from the fact that he's carrying a little groin injury, and I think most of us would like to see him play this weekend. And he was the big story of last week, and probably the reason he hasn't been mentioned so far is because there were so many storylines since. But Jamie Osborne, we all had questions over how that was going to go last week, and it wasn't a 10 out of 10 performance, but he did absolutely fine and scored a nice try.
Yeah, no, really, really positive debut for him. Like, big ask out of position. And actually, probably the game didn't unfold the way Farrell probably thought it would unfold. Mm. And probably the reason they picked Jamie over Jimmy O'Brien wasn't as relevant, because it wasn't a feature. The kick tennis didn't really feature, and being able to outkick them, or at least match them kick-em-wise in terms of length, didn't happen. So, but he did the other stuff well.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't look frazzled. Didn't look like he was scared by the occasion, and a real positive. So that was 100%. That's a big positive for Ireland. And I think it would be great for him to be able to get more minutes this week, and maybe even if that was on the bench and coming on centre or whatever. But yeah, obviously there's a doubt around his injury, but no, he can be very happy with his Test debut.
Yeah, now we did get to speak to him after the game, and according to him anyway, he didn't think the groin injury was going to be enough to stop him this week. But obviously, you never know how those things are going to go. But he did have to deal with a couple of high balls early in the game, dealt with them absolutely fine. He was definitely frustrated with the kick down the touchline from Colby that he ended up getting a hand on before it went out of play. But in terms of the nuts and bolts of the performance, it was all done without fuss, I suppose, is probably the best way of describing it, which is what you want for a 22-year-old player making his debut at Loftus-Versfeld against the world champions.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, he's not, he's never going to be Willy the Roo like. He's not a real second playmaker.
Yeah.
He's not a, you know, he was never going to run back and beat six or seven people with footwork. You know, he's a very physical player. And as I said, the game didn't really unfold to suit his skill set from a kicking point of view. But everything else he did was very tidy and done without any fuss. And it's a good starting point for sure.
Right. We'll leave it there. Final call. Obviously, it's going to be hard without knowing what the team is going to be on Thursday. Rough prediction?
I thought after the game that we would had a better chance of winning in Durban than we had in Pretoria, because I think we didn't play. Like we didn't, our attack was very slow to get going. It did us a bit at the end and we started to find some holes. But I can't help fear that we're going to get destroyed at scrum. From and in the first half this week. I think this game, this is the biggest test for Farrell to keep that record of staying in games. You know what I mean? This could be nasty enough.
Right.
Now that's reading into the injuries.
That was a nasty enough way to end the podcast.
No, sorry. Yeah, we have to go back to something positive. But that's based on the fact that I'm worried about our injury profile. And
yeah.
If Porter was out, I'd be very, very worried.
Yeah, I suppose it really just does depend on what sort of a team can be named on Thursday. So we'll put a pin in it until then. Live commentary of the second test between South Africa and Ireland live on RT Radio 1 this Saturday afternoon on Saturday Sport. 4 p.m. kickoff, Irish time, 5 o'clock local time in Durban. Birch, thanks a million.
Thanks, man.
And
thank you.
For the second last podcast of the season, we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks.